When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to another Gavin Jules Meets. Jules, World Cup, controversy, referees.
Yes.
Always happens.
Yeah.
So you and I decided to have a little chat with this man.
Pierluigi Collina, chairman of the FIFA Referees Committee.
And I think a former referee in the 2002 World Cup final, a bunch of things. Yes, I think.
Yeah, I've been sometimes a lot of... on the field of play. Yeah, I've been sometimes on the field of play.
Once or twice. I want to get right into it because the World Cup is a showcase for the best players, the best teams that qualify, unlike Italy. But it's also the best referees. The referees are selected. Referees come from every confederation. I don't think everybody understands how the process works. So can you tell us, I presume you don't choose by yourself. You have a group that monitors and looks at referees, right?
Yeah, and it was not even a lottery. We started the selection process a few months after the World Cup 2018 was over. We started a project called Road to Qatar 2022. Identified quite a big number of referees from all over the world, and we start working with them. But then, unfortunately, our plans needed to be amended due to the pandemic. We had some issues. We tried to overcome these issues by using more and more virtual seminars instead of seminars in presence. So we continue to work with these match officials, and once the pandemic let us to restart with seminars in presence, we had this kind of activities. So I repeat, it was a long process which came to an end when we have selected the final group of match officials, 36 referees, 69 assistant referees and 24 video match officials. So 129 in total, quite a big team, I would say.
So just for clarity, in terms of, so you have seminars for them. Do you also send people to watch them in their club competitions as well?
We kept them monitored both in their domestic competitions as well as in international competitions. These referees were invited to FIFA youth tournaments, although due to the pandemic, we had to cancel some under 20, under 17 tournaments. But they definitely were monitored. And even once they were selected, the monitoring process continued. So they received a follow-up in terms of training, of course, when needed, as well as the support from our medical staff, and also all the matches they refereed were monitored by FIFA instructors, providing them feedback and us, the team I work with, let's say, a feedback about the performances. So quite an accurate selection process.
But in the end, on the last day, is it a case of you and your team with all your reports sitting in a room and saying, okay, this one, definitely, let's have a discussion between these two and so on. Is that what happens? Is there there's a group of people who.
Yeah, the FIFA referee committee. The FIFA referee committee has members from all the confederations, and namely the head of refereeing of each confederation. So certainly we have in our team people who regularly follow the performances of the referees in each single confederation. But then myself and the director of refereeing of FIFA, Massimo Busacca, we are also in a position to know what the match officials did during the process.
And to be clear, they're all ex-referees, or almost all ex-referees, right?
Of course.
You say, of course, but in the past, I think in 2002, when you were officiated the World Cup final, they were not all ex-referees. You had a lot of sort of professional football executives. Do you think this has been a positive change to put the referees?
Absolutely, absolutely positive. It is a big change that was implemented by Gianni Infantino, when he became president of FIFA in 2016, and it was something that it was already working like this in UEFA, where I worked for 8 years. Those who have a responsibility in refereeing must have a refereeing background and should be independent from anyone else.
I'm Gianluigi, there will be three women referees as well this time around for the first time. Are you surprised how quickly maybe attitudes have changed? I guess you're very happy with the fact that in this World Cup you can have three women referees taking part in the men's World Cup.
We have three women referees and three women assistant referees. They all had experiences in men football, not only domestically or in their confederation, even at our in FIFA competitions. I have to say, I understand that this is quite big news, because it's the first time in the football World Cup history. But honestly, I would really love that this is something that is not really so interesting. I would like to have them as six members of the FIFA refereeing team at the World Cup. And this is how they will be considered starting from tomorrow, when they will arrive there, and the day after, when we will start the final preparatory seminar in Doha. There is no difference. One there in Qatar, there is no difference.
You said you're taking 24 video match officials. And I'm curious, because tell me if you agree, but being a video match official or a VAR or whichever terminology you want to use, in some ways, it can be a different skill from refereeing on the field, because you're looking at a screen rather than reality. No.
Yeah, you're right. And the selection of video match officials has been made based on their skill as a video match official. I use the word video match officials because we have different roles. During the World Cup, there will be four video match officials working. There will be a VAR, a video assistant referee. There will be an assistant VAR. There will be a second assistant VAR who will oversee everything related to offside. And then there will be another assistant VAR who will, facilitate the flow of the information between the other. So it's quite a big team, and they can operate in each of these roles. That's why I use the word video match officials, but I repeat, they were selected because of their skill in their position, differently from Russia 4 years ago. We have more experience. You certainly remember that in Russia, where everything went well or very well, the experience was not that big. 4 years later, the technology has been implemented in all major competition in the world, club or national teams. So certainly we have much more experience, and also the selection process was easier because we had more experience from these video match officials.
So you feel it's better to have a slightly bigger team in the VR, truck
room?
In terms of their communication, in terms of helping each other out, in terms of like discussing a decision and things like that, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah, it's work which is prepared very accurately. Communication is definitely one of the most important part. We have a tournament played by local semi-professional players just to give every match officials, referee, assistant referee, video match official, the possibility to officiate one match there. I know that differently from Russia 4 years ago, our match officials had the last match in their domestic competition probably this weekend, the past week, exactly the last weekend. So there is not a gap, not a break between the end of refereeing and the start of the World Cup. But we wanted that they get used to the country, to the temperature there, with everything. So we are really trying to do everything possible to get them very well prepared.
Once they're actually in Qatar, they're all going to be in the same hotel, in the same complex. And unlike Russia or Brazil before that, there's not going to be as much traveling around because all the games are in one city. Can you give us a bit of a flavor? What do these people do during the day and in their downtime? Like, do they play football, for example, have a kickabout with each other? And if so, there's nobody wants the referee, I assume, when that happens. Do they play table tennis? Do they can't be studying all the time, right?
The gym?
No, the headquarter, as you said, the headquarter is in Doha. Logistically, it's a very easy World Cup because we play in a city, and the farthest stadium from our headquarter is less than 40 kilometers. So all the match officials will travel to the stadium and back to our headquarters the same day, completely different from Russia 4 years ago, completely different from Canada, US, and Mexico in 4 years' time. They will be busy, believe me. They will be busy. They have to know in advance all the information about the tactics played by the teams, all the specific situation they can face during the match they are going to referee. So activities on the field of play in the morning, and in the afternoon we have sessions in the room discussing incidents and so on. And once the World Cup starts, of course, there is a rotation depending on the appointments, but basically the morning is dedicated to the activities on the field of play and to the debriefing of the matches already played, while the afternoon, with four matches each day, referees will be busy to follow and to watch the matches on TV, because it's also part of the preparation. They have to know everything about the team. So the best way to understand how a team plays is to watch all the matches. So believe me, they will have enough things to do.
Jules, one of the things that struck me was how much preparation goes into officiating today. And I don't know that everybody knows this.
Now, you probably think they just turn up and that's it.
Yeah, I knew that this was the case with Collina because 20 years ago when I sat down, when Gianluca Vialli and I did a book together, we sat down with him and he talked about how he studied video because he wanted to know for each player what were their characteristics and they tend to take the ball first time, what kind of runs did they make, because it would help him be a better referee. So that's why we asked him whether this was normal today.
I'm proud to say yes, because the referees of my generation thought that being fit and knowing the laws of the game was enough to be prepared as a referee for a match. And I remember when I asked the staff at the World Cup in Japan, the 2 days before the final, all the VHS of the match played by Germany and Brazil. You remember that at that time, 2002, the only way to watch something recorded was VHS. So basically I spent 1.5 days in my room watching all the matches, re-watching all the matches played by Brazil and Japan, exactly to find all this kind of information. The objective, the goal of a referee is to be one step forward, to know before what is going to happen, because this makes the decision easier to be taken. So at that time was pretty unusual, and I repeat, I'm proud that today this is the way the referee prepares the match. As I said, we have two match analysts. They are licensed coaches, and they do exactly what the match analyst of a team coach receives. So basically they offer our referees all this kind of information, of course, from the referee's perspective. So what is needed from this perspective, knowing in advance, just as an example, how a team defends on a free kick or a corner kick, zonal versus man-to-man, or specific characteristic of a player, preferred foot, all this kind of information, if known before, give the referee the possibility to know in advance what is going to happen. And then, I repeat, if you know it before, making the correct decision is definitely easier.
What would be the, when you have all your team together, all your referees and assistant referees and VAR referees and all of that, what would be your first message when you're all together for the first time? Will you tell them, enjoy it, this is an amazing experience?
Here we are. No, it's really a good team. We are working, I said, with them since a long time. They know each other very well. There is a very strong team spirit between them, and it's nice to see how they interact. Even there is a sort of rivalry between them.
Yeah.
Because of course you are appointed for a match and not the other. So there is a sort of, I would say, healthy rivalry between them. But its team spirit is very strong.
I want to touch upon that, because obviously in your case, Brazil and Germany couldn't be in the final, or were in the final. So you couldn't have a Brazilian or German referee for the final. And I'm sure you were a big Italy fan at the 2002 World Cup, but joking aside, at what stage does that become a consideration? Is it the semifinal stage where maybe you have four semifinalists and you think maybe it's not appropriate to select somebody or to keep somebody aside from one of those countries, for the other semifinal? Is this more of an issue in the past? Have you moved past that?
In the past was definitely an issue. I remember in 1998 in France, Italy qualified, and I was invited to leave the door, to leave the room, because of course that was the rule. And in Japan, in Korea, Japan, happened the exactly opposite. Italy lost Korea in the round of 16, and I had the chance to go until the end. Now it's pretty different. We keep the referees, the match officials, despite their nationality. Of course, we need to be careful to consider all the encroachments, all the crossing. So sometimes the appointing process is not that easy, because when you appoint a stage of the competition, you cannot consider only this stage. You have already to consider the next round, because depending on the decisions you take, maybe you can tie up your hands for the next round. So it's not an easy exercise, believe me.
It must be really difficult.
Yeah, but it seemed to me that when I was growing up, it was came down to the confederations in the final. That, you know, was if you had two teams from the same confederation, it didn't matter. But if they were from different confederations, usually South America and UEFA, it seemed like it had to be a Mexican referee, because they were the only ones experienced enough who were from. We've moved past all of this, no?
I have to say that our main criteria is quality. So we want the correct referee for every match. Then, if the sort of neutrality might be respected, okay, that's fine. But I repeat, the first priority is given quality. So when we choose the referee, a referee or a team of match officials, it's because they are those who we think are the best for that specific match.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Referees are associated to national associations. And it seems to me that in club football, in the top leagues, the only area of protectionism where it's almost impossible to have foreign referees who are part of the team is refereeing, right? You've got foreign players, coaches, owners, and so on. We had a case recently. We have one case of Jared Gillette, who's top referee in the A-League, and he wanted to come referee in England. And even then, he had to get a visa, student visa, because he also studies, and he had to start from four tiers down. You gave me an answer on this many years ago, but I just want to ask you again, like, as a referee, if you were starting out today and you were not from Italy, if you were from Uzbekistan or whatever, would you rather see referees treated as we are the best we can, so we compete with the best like every other category in football? Or do you still believe in the importance of a referee staying within their national association?
Well, there are different aspects to be considered. We have an Iranian referee who is currently refereeing the A-League in Australia. He lives there, Ali Reza Fagani. And since, if I'm not wrong, three seasons, he is refereeing the A-League. There are not many. I would say it's sort of a coin with two sides. Certainly, giving the possibility to refereeing in in other leagues, if you move to that country, it's something understandable. On the other side, we have to somehow protect the local leagues, every leagues. Otherwise, there might be someone collecting all the best referees from all over the world and create a panel of or referees simply because they can invest more money in them. So,
like they do with players and coaches, no?
like players and coaches, of course. So I think in the future then it might be possible that there might be more moves, exceptions, I would say, but I think it won't become like we had the referees in the past who moved on a professional basis in another country. You certainly remember Klattenburg, who went to Saudi. A Serbian referee Mazic went to China. So not many, but there were some who became professional in another league.
I mean, I wanted to ask you, we've seen in Germany, for example, two referees coming onto, I think, television shows to explain the decisions from the game before. In France as well, one referee gave an interview to L'Equipe where he explained, you know, why he made decisions. And I think there's, amongst fans, maybe there's feeling at times that it would be good for the referee to be able to explain, okay, this is why I gave that foul or not give that one. This is why I gave a yellow card here. Where do you stand as the head of the referee? Where do you stand? Do you think this would be a good thing? You can't do it too often. You don't think it should happen? Well, a bit of both?
I cannot say that I'm against this because in 1997, so some years ago, I went to the media room after a match I refereed in Italy, explaining a decision I have taken during the match. So I cannot say that I'm against. But I have to say that, of course, we need to be careful. Not always after a match is the best moment to explain. It depends on peculiarities of each competition. I know that in Germany they are used to do that since many, many years.
Yeah.
Other countries, they are more reluctant. I repeat, there is not a specific rule to be followed.
I take his point about after the match.
Yeah, no, me too.
Tempers are high, but I'd love it if there's still some mechanism to explain. Doesn't have to be the referee itself. Can be somebody who listens in and maybe liaises quickly to the referee. But do it in real time so that, you know, we don't have narratives hanging over us.
No, I agree with you. And you know how in Russia was obviously the debut for VAR at the World Cup and there was a lot of scrutiny on it. And to be fair, I think for all accounts, it went well, really well even. 4 years on, I mean, VAR is probably better than it was then because we've got 4 years of experience out of it and what works, what doesn't work. We've also had, for example, the semi-automatic offside in the Champions League, which should be much quicker and just help the referee even more. And, you know, again, other things on how computers have helped referees. And obviously he's the best guy to ask how he feels about all those technological advantages that referees have now and will have in this World Cup compared to before.
No, I'm very pleased that the assessment of VAR in Russia was very, very positive. We have not to forget that we are coming from very, very little experience. So we really succeeded there. And always, when you were positive, the bar is very high. So the expectations are very high. And the video match officials and more in general, the match officials' job in Qatar will be more difficult because of the high expectations. I have to say the time needed to make a decision is something that we tried to improve without forgetting that being quick and being accurate, they don't work together. They cannot live together because sometimes there are many things to be checked in a row and it takes time. If you want to be sure, it takes time. But the technology we are going to implement, the semi-automated offside, so related to offside situations, this certainly will lower the time needed for making a decision. It cannot be live, so forget that we have an instantaneous decision on offside. It will take time, but based on the experience, the test we made, and the matches where the semi-automated offside technology was implemented recently, the time needed is definitely lower. Yeah. And also more accurate, the decision more accurate, because you know that the semi-automated offside works with fixing the position of the players on the field of play, receiving data from 29 points of the player's body 50 times per second. And we have also the so-called connected ball and the data from the ball to determine when the ball is played are received by the technology 500 times per second. So we are talking of really high level of accuracy in determining where the players were and when the ball was played by a teammate.
I think, am I right in saying the margin of error is actually lower than it is for goal line technology with semi-automatic offside?
Well, the I'm not that expert in this matter. I receive the support of the innovation and technology division at FIFA, which is the division developing everything related to technology and goal line technology. I remember when it was implemented for the first time, had a margin of error of 3 centimeters, and now is in the region of few millimeters because they improved the quality. And this is the same, and it will be the same for the VAR and the semi-automated offside technology.
Hey, sometimes when we, Jules and I, and I'm sure you do too, we watch games from different leagues around Europe, and the impression is that sometimes in different cultures, they officiate differently. Obviously, if it's the World Cup or the Champions League or the Libertadores, you try to go for a more uniform way of refereeing. Would you, so that you don't necessarily bring your culture as a Brazilian referee, as a German referee with you, but you say, okay, this is the standard that we want to apply. Would you say that that's accurate?
I can say that the differences in the way they play, the teams play, were bigger some years ago.
Yeah.
I remember when I was refereeing matches between in Europe, matches between teams, clubs from the northern part of Europe and Mediterranean areas, it was very difficult. Yeah. Today, as you said before, there are coaches and players mixing, so it changed. Concerning referees, when they land in Doha, they are not anymore a Brazilian referee, a German referee, or a Chinese referee, or an Australian referee. They are FIFA referees. They are part of the FIFA refereeing team. So one of the most important goals we want to achieve, and we worked in this direction, is to have consistency in terms of how they are on the field of play. Then, of course, they must know football and they must know how the differences might be. And they have to be ready to appreciate these differences and be ready to officiate in the proper way.
Is during this World Cup time wasting something that you've been thinking about a little bit? We've seen games and big games in the Champions League, for example, where the effective time of play was actually around the 55 minutes over the whole 90 minutes. And I think this is something that we've all thought about. I mean, you and Gabby have talked before about maybe stopping the clock at times, and maybe one day we'll try that. I don't know. Is this something for this World Cup that maybe you'll be worried about, or is it a different competition to what we see domestically week in and week out?
When we speak about wasted time in a match, we should make a difference between the time wasted because of the game and the time wasted deliberately by players.
Yeah.
Believe me, the most important, the largest part is the time wasted because of the match. In a match, there are, on average, 9 minutes lost on throw-ins. Almost the same, similar, or the same, almost the same for goal kicks. They are part of the game.
Yeah.
And even players would speed up the throw-in and the goal kicks sometimes will be wasted. However, what we already did in Russia, you may remember, is to more accurately calculate the time to be compensated at the end of each half. And in Russia, we told everybody, don't be surprised if you will see the fourth official raising the electronic board with a big number on it. 6, 7, 8 minutes. If we want to have more active time and we want to compensate the time lost during the match, we need to be ready to see this kind of additional time given. Think a match where in a half there are 3 goals scored. The celebration normally takes 1.5 minutes. So with 3 goals scored, basically you lose 5, 6 minutes.
Yeah, already, yeah.
For something that is nice to see for those who scored, probably for the opponent, not that nice. So what we really want to do is to accurately calculate the time to be added at the end of each half.
So who does that? The fourth official?
It will be the fourth official mainly.
Does he have some inputs from anybody else?
We were successful in Russia, so we expect to be successful as well in... and I'm not talking of the time lost for VAR intervention, because this is something which is different, and this is calculated by the assistant video assistant referee in a very sharp, precise way.
So I just want to clarify this. So one of the assistant video referees keeps track of how much time was lost to on-field reviews or just waiting for a VAR decision. Yeah. And then the fourth official calculates how much time is lost for injuries or arguing with the referee. Or
the main relevant incidents during the match, which are a long...
And then he adds them together.
Yeah, basically, yes.
Years ago... Correct me if I'm wrong, maybe when you started refereeing, the referee decided how much time to add on, right?
Pretended to be decided.
Pretended, yeah. Could you explain this?
We look at him.
I always wondered, how does the referee, if you're so concentrated, how can you do that?
Even at the time I was refereeing, the info was coming from the fourth official. Because as you correctly said, you are too much focused on what is going on, that it might be possible that you forget something or do not consider something. So it's the fourth official who usually proposes the amount of time to be added, and the referee pretends to decide and decides.
As part of the whole refereeing team, do you have anybody, because look, these are very good referees, but everybody makes mistakes. I remember my friend Graham Pohl, famously in a World Cup, gave 3 yellow cards, and he talked about psychologically how crushing it was for him to make a mistake. Do you have a therapist or somebody there to maybe help with this or help with feelings of being far away? Or have we reached a point where referees are so professional, so strong that if they make a mistake, they say, okay, I made a mistake and I move on?
The support of especially, doesn't matter the field of activity, is always important if needed. But it's very personal. So I remember when I had the competitions as a referee, there was a psychologist as part of the team. We thought of it. And at the end of the day, I think it's important or is beneficial if this specialist work with you on a regularly basis. I open myself with someone I know because I work with during the year. So what we told our referees is we do not provide you this support during the World Cup because probably we have not the person you would like to have a support from. But the support can come even from remote. You don't need the presence. It's not a physiotherapist who has to make a treatment and it has to be in person. Something related to the psychological part you can even handle on a Zoom call from remote. So if they feel the need, they are professional, and I'm sure they will be ready to receive this kind of support during the competition, as well as they have received during the preparation and their normal activity.
Do you find most referees have somebody, most high-level referees have somebody like that? Maybe it can be an older referee, a mentor.
It's a very personal thing. I would never ask them, are you using this kind of support or not? Because I want to make them very free to do what they are comfortable with, without imposing anything, or because something that works very well for someone doesn't work for someone else. I can tell you, if you have 1 minute, an anecdote about this. I remember I was a very young referee, and you, Gabriele, are Italian, so you certainly remember Gigi Agnolin as one of the main referee of my start as a referee. And he told me, I remember one day during a dinner, he told me that he was used to taking up before the match. When he arrived at the stadium, he asked the assistant referee to leave the dressing room, and he was used to go on a small massage bed, taking a very short nap. And I thought, if he's one of the best referee in the world, or certainly the best referee in Italy, and it works for him, now I found a way to be a good referee or the best referee. I did it. I did it. And it was the worst match I refereed. What I needed was completely the opposite, not to relax myself, but get to the level of alert immediately below the anxia level. You know that anxia reduces performances. Mm. If you can manage to get that level immediately below, all your senses are alerted and you are controlling everything. And this is what I needed. So doing what he needed to me was the worst decision I could do. So I learned from that experience, and I learned that something working for someone may not work for someone else. You need to find your own way.
Could one of your referees during the competition, could they knock at your door and said, I just wanted to ask you something, I just wanted to discuss something with you, or you are too busy, they're too busy, and it's not really your role even?
We succeed if they succeed. So our goal is to make them in a position to succeed. So whatever I can do, happy to do.
Yeah.
The experience I had as a referee, the experience I had after what I do today, this is at their disposal. And I repeat, whatever I can do, I will do. And of course, all the other people together with me and their presence there is very important, starting from Massimo Busacca and all the other instructors and coaches we have there. They are all 24/7 ready to provide all the support it might be needed.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Yeah, Jules, I thought that was interesting. By the way, it totally makes sense. Anybody who's been around sort of therapy counselors, grief counselors, it's not one size fits all. And I imagine, if you're a referee at a World Cup level, you've been officiating for a long time, you have your own personal support networks, you have your own mechanisms for dealing with the fact that...
You used to, yeah.
Yeah, you get abuse and you make mistakes because you're human, right? And so I'm not saying they're different from other human beings, but they kind of are, right? They have to have that level. And it's not going to be that they don't care if they make a mistake, they just move on. Maybe they do care tremendously, but maybe there's a relative, maybe there's somebody back home, you know, who they deal with. And, you know, it's good to know that they're supported, but there isn't going to be a one-size-fits-all form of support.
No, I just wonder how many go and knock out Pierluigi's door to, you know, to have a chat, or if they feel buzzing or low or something like that. But it's good that he's always available. And we obviously did the interview on Zoom. He was back home in Italy. He lives not too far from Florence. And in his office where he did the interview with us, we could see behind him a lot of footballs. And usually when we interview players like that, they usually have a lot of shirts that they've swapped, or their own shirts, something like that. For referees, it's a bit harder, of course. But the footballs were there, and one looks like World Cup football. Did you think?
From the 2002 World Cup final, perhaps? Yeah, Jules, I picked up on that too. And so I asked him, right? If you score a hat trick in a game, tradition is you get to keep the ball. But how does a referee get to keep a ball?
Yeah, I cannot score three goals. So it's, it's not hand over a ball as an award. But if he managed to pick up the ball and don't leave it ever... You can get the World Cup final ball at your home. That is.
So this is the actual ball from the 2002 World Cup final in Yokohama, Brazil against Germany.
Yes.
And none of the Brazilians came up to you and said, "Hey, look, we just became world champions for the fifth time. Can I have the ball?"
Unfortunately, Ronaldo scored twice.
No hat trick ball for him, you know. Simple as that.
So the ball came, and I was so keen to get the ball back with me that I didn't leave during the entire award ceremony. I went on a podium to receive a gold medal. I have to say, first time the referee was given this kind of award, and I kept the ball between my hands during all the award ceremony.
Well, I mean, obviously, I think this is the highlight of your career with the Champions League final as well, and what Champions League final it was that you refereed, by the way, that maybe we can talk a little bit later after, but what was it like, that World Cup final? How did you feel before, like literally in the tunnel? How did you feel during? How did you feel after? I guess you were so happy not to have made a mistake, which is, I guess, the best that you could do, of course. But what was all those feelings like?
It's a difficult answer to be given because I always lived every match as a match, because it's the best way to deal with something. You are there, you are prepared, this is your job. So I repeat, it's positive because you don't feel too much the emotion. Mm. But the other side of the coin is you do not remember particular things because you dealt with them in a very routinary way. So from that match, there was something a bit unusual because we had to get the stadium very much in advance, much more than usual, not only the refereeing team, but also Germany and Brazil, because of the protocol of the Japanese emperor that blocked the traffic around the stadium. So we had to get at the stadium rather 2.5 hours before the kickoff, when the normal time to get the stadium is 90 minutes, 95 minutes before the kickoff. So we had to find out something to do. And what was different from all the other was these 40 minutes spent in the corridor chatting each other. Players among them, most of the Brazilians were playing in Europe, and almost all of them were playing Champions League, and many of them were playing in Italy, so we knew each other very well. So we spent a lot of time chatting, trying really to get the correct time to start the normal routine.
Yeah. So 2.5 hours before, that's not going to happen in Qatar, right? It's so
hopefully,
small.
Hopefully not. Hopefully not. As a coach, I would get a bit nervous because as a football coach, the same. If you are used to do something with the routine, when you change, you get a bit nervous.
Question for me, just about weird refereeing things that I have never seen. And you probably, I'm wondering if you have, a player being sent off for a second yellow for time wasting. I'm sure it has happened. But in practice, I get the sense that it's extremely rare. And so maybe a first yellow for time wasting is almost like a license to continue wasting time. Have you ever seen it happen? Have you ever done it?
Honestly, I don't remember. I wasn't happy to show cards yellow or red, and this is something that probably people do not understand. It's not a joy for a referee to issue cards during a match. Certainly, it happened because I had quite a big number of matches, so certainly it's something that have happened. No, I have to say it's not a sort of license to do whatever you want, because you know that you were already cautioned, and the referees are reluctant to double caution someone for this reason. I think I hope it won't happen during the World Cup, because I repeat, it's not that good if players are sent off. But on the other hand, we need to protect the image of the game, and this is certainly one of the examples of protecting the image of the game. The other objective referees will have during The World Cup is to protect the players' safety. We cannot accept to have players injured because of a brutal or very strong tackle committed by an opponent. We want to have players on the field to play, showing their skill and not recovering from an injury caused by an opponent.
But already that's been a trend in the game in general. I mean, I'm old enough to remember football in the 1980s, and you would see a lot of very nasty tackles, which, you know, today, maybe it's VAR, maybe it's better referees, maybe it's fitter players. You see a lot less. Would you agree that that's been a trend? The dirty tackle, the very dangerous tackle, is a lot less than before.
The objective, the goal, has been achieved. So the move, the change started when many very skillful players were injured because that kind of tackles. So the laws of the game reacted. You certainly remember that it was introduced the so-called tackle from behind, and then not only from behind, but any kind of tackle that may endanger the safety of an opponent, meaning that it's not a matter of deliberately doing something, but simply risking to provoke an injury. We had a workshop with the coaches of the 32 teams playing the World Cup a couple of weeks ago, and we highlighted some incidents where players with a very outstretched leg, very high, hit the head of an opponent. We are absolutely sure that the intention was not to hit the opponent's head, but nevertheless, you cannot play the ball at that level, risking to hit the heads, the face, the neck, so a very risky part of the body of an opponent, and risking to endanger the opponent. So you have to refrain from committing something like this.
I mean, the protection on players now compared to what it was 20 years ago is obviously, might sound obvious, but I think it's interesting to see the path to get there, the differences in the way referees are refereeing, but the way the game is being played as well, plus how the atmosphere has changed, the attitude from players have changed.
I think also players bigger, faster, stronger, game higher, higher game pace, almost, more cameras. Yeah. Referees had to keep up with that.
Yeah.
Now, going back to VAR, though, I had to ask him something which really bogged me. So I went back and I reread the VAR protocol on the IFAB website, and this rule is still there. A referee doesn't see something clearly,
yeah,
has the right to ask the VAR for an on-field review.
He can go. So it comes from him instead of coming from the VAR rule.
Yeah, so the VAR can't make the referee. The VAR can only recommend an on-field review. But the referee on the pitch can say, ooh, I didn't get a good look at that. Hey, VAR, can I go look at it again on the pitch side monitor? So I asked him, why does this never happen? Why is that rule there?
It's because when the referee makes a decision on the field of play, he is convinced that he made a good decision. He made a correct call. And he decides when he is in a condition to decide. So it cannot happen that the referee says, I'm in doubt, I go and see. He makes the decision. And even not deciding means to have made a decision.
Of course, yeah.
What referees can do is to tell the video assistant referee, I've seen this, double check. So inviting the VAR to check an incident because he had not all the elements to make a decision. And for this reason, he didn't decide, or simply he played on, but there might have been something. So he asks the VAR to double check a specific incident.
But that's not the same as him asking for the on-field review.
This is not an official. Yeah, this is not. It's stopping the game. I go and see. This is something I confirm. I never seen it as well.
I know you read the protocol. It's strange to me that it's in there.
It's a possibility given. But as I repeat, when the referee is on the field of play, normally he is convinced about the decision he took.
There is a perception that sometimes referees, if there is a hard tackle and referees will give a yellow card, knowing that the video assistant referee will look at it and say, you know what, you have there's the conditions for a red card. Please look at the on-field review. And that way they arrive at the correct decision that way. Whereas types of fouls that maybe before VAR, the referee would have gone straight to a red. Is this a phenomenon, you think, or is it just people in the media spending too much time thinking about this?
From the referee's side, doing that is wrong and is not even beneficial, because if the decision, the correct decision, would have been a red card, certainly the intervention of the video assistant referee and the technology gives the referee the possibility to take the correct decision at the end. But when he will speak with me, he have to explain me why he went for a yellow when it was a clear red.
Yeah. Right.
Because VAR is very positive, because he restores the truth. He avoids a mistake from being committed. So coaches, players, journalists normally do not comment negatively on an initial wrong decision corrected thanks to the VAR, because they are more interested in the final outcome, and the final outcome is correct. Okay? But my job is different.
My job is to have
correct decisions taken on the field of play. So there are decisions which are, let's say, beyond the possibility of a human being, because things happen so quickly, the referee is not always in the correct position, and basically what he is able to see on the field of play cannot be the same the technology today can show. That's why we implemented technology. But if the referee was in a good position, if the referee was in a condition to make a good call, I repeat, he has to explain me or people doing my job why the wrong decision was initially taken. That's why I say it's not beneficial for a referee to make an initial wrong decision knowing that it will be corrected by the video assistant referee, because the mistake remains.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You told me already, but I want to ask you again, the players that impressed you maybe when you were refereeing, I don't know if you've got a top three, and it'd be even better if there's a Frenchman in there. And also that Champions League final, because it's the most iconic, the most memorable Champions League final of all time that you refereed. So I just wanted to ask you those two questions.
Yeah, the 2 minutes, 2 and 34 seconds in Barcelona, in that Man United Bayern Munich Champions League final 1999, certainly are memorable. Not the rest of the match, because the rest of the match was, I would say, an enjoyable match, but certainly not the ultimate final, as that final is called. It was something unique because we are talking of the most important match in a club competition in the world, and having two goals scored in 2.5 minutes during stoppage time, moving the trophy from one side to another in that atmosphere, Camp Nou, a great stadium at the time. The capacity was not reduced for security reasons, so there were more than 90,000 people. Certainly was incredible. Definitely something I will never forget. I never refereed Maradona, so I cannot say that the best was Maradona. I had the privilege to referee many great players. Ronaldo, a phenomenon. So the Brazilian Ronaldo certainly is the one probably did something more than the other. But you mentioned a French player, Zidane, was outstanding. Maldini, Baggio, as yeah. Italians, of course. So there were many. I played as a central defender when I was young. So certainly Fernando Hierro was someone great, playing almost in the same position. Mm. There were many.
So when you watch the World Cup, you described you have a flair for these great. When you're there in Doha watching the World Cup, are you just so focused on watching the referees, or you have observers and assistants who do that for you, that you will actually be able to enjoy the football? You'll be actually able to watch Neymar and Mbappe and Messi?
If I want to enjoy something, I switch on the NBA channel and I watch the match. I can't say Italian basketball because my loved team is playing second division this year, so it's not the best.
Fortitudo, yeah?
Yeah, Fortitudo Bologna. We are relegated last year, so it's not the best year to speak of it. Yeah. I will switch to the NBA channel and I relax watching a basketball match.
And I think it's worse because Virtus Bologna are in the EuroLeague this year,
don't
right?
Don't say too much, come on. Don't say too much.
Yeah, so Jules, I'm just imagining Colina sitting in his hotel room in Doha,
I love that.
Deep in the night, like, you know, turning on and like streaming like NBA hoops.
He is Paolo Banchero, big fan, number one fan.
He's a huge basketball fan. As you know, he's a fan of Fortitudo Bologna, which is one of the two teams, Bologna, the basketball capital of Italy. It doesn't like the fact, I'm sure, that the rivals Virtus Bologna this year.
I'm doing better.
But we digress.
What a great shot.
But it was, he was open. He was reactive. Look, it's not easy being in charge of referees. It's not easy working for FIFA. I will say this. He's one of the few people who's worked, been head of referees at UEFA and at FIFA. So he knows the system. When you can get both the people who run those organizations to like you, you're onto something.
Yeah. And let's wish him and his team of referees the best World Cup possible, you know, not making mistakes and having the whole, you know, the whole competition on a high.
It's a massive cliche, but the less we talk about them, the better the competition is. So hope you enjoyed our chat with Pierluigi Collina. We've got another one coming up shortly with Vincent Kompany, former Belgium and City star, now Burnley manager. And we have a whole archive full of this. If you enjoy long form conversation, go on there. You'll find them all, from Sami Khedira to Victor Montagnani to Zlatan Ibrahimovic,
the one and only. Many others.
And many others, yeah. Lots to dive into there. Lots of meaty topics.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes.
They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.